This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, I'm Fiona Pepper and this is Fictions on RN Summer. Today, we bring you Corona Tales, COVID-19 stories of how we tried to negotiate our most intimate relationships during lockdown.
This week in Corona Town, things that made me cry. Remembering I never took dance lessons. A clip of Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers dancing fast, then slow, then fast again. Dance lessons on YouTube.
Elements of tap dancing, what you start with before you become a real tap dancer.
Tripping over the dog. A sprained ankle.
The front part of your shoe. Give me toe. So you have right and left.
Things that made me smile. Hot chocolate. Watching Fred and Ginger again, ankle elevated. An easy stroll down at the park. A kid twirling in the park, a sausage sandwich in her hand, enjoying the space. The dog almost walking past her, then stopping to watch the sausage sandwich in her hand.
Mothers and daughters. It's always been a fairly tricky relationship. There's generally quite a bit of tension bubbling away in the household. And this tension was only exacerbated by lockdown. Producer Sophie Townsend has been watching her youngest daughter trying to take flight. It hasn't always been pretty.
I have a postcard tacked up on my wall. One of those dramatic wildlife moments caught on camera. In an icy white landscape, an Arctic wolf bares its teeth as it rears up on its hind legs to attack a snow goose who has come into land, perfectly happy, until it sees the wolf and is now desperately mid-air trying to reverse backwards. You can see the goose's gears working, trying to get itself out of this mess. It's comic and tragic and terribly tense. In COVID isolation, away from the world, trapped in the house with the 16-year-old girl, I am the goose. She's just so bloody angry. And I guess I was prepared for boredom and I was prepared for sadness, but anger, no. And she's baring her teeth at me. And what did I do, by the way? This isn't my fault. I'm not making the rules. It's her birthday, a fortnight after lockdown begins in earnest, and she predicts it will be the worst birthday ever. It's not so much a prediction as a universal truth that no one can argue with. There's nothing I can say to dissuade her, and I'm not an idiot. I'm not trying to say that it's all going to be great, that I'll find some way of making this the best day of her life. But my suggestions, a Zoom party, a bushwalk, I mean, for God's sake, a drive-by past her friends' houses for them to wave at her and throw streamers, well, it just gets lamer and lamer. And I'm headed right for the mouth of that Arctic wolf. She's been metaphorically baring her teeth her whole life. If there's a barrier to her getting what she wants, She'll do her best to bust through it. She came out of the womb screaming, literally. When she came out, they had to hold her upside down to get rid of the fluid she'd ingested on her way out into the world. She'd had her mouth open so wide in a wail of fury. Which isn't to say she's not lovely. It's not to say that she doesn't love deeply. She really does. She laughs loud and long. She dances in public on the street. She makes little kids laugh. She works at the local grocery store and the old ladies love her. She makes tremendous Vegemite toast and tea when you need it. And when she hugs you, she really hugs you. But I am the goose. And for years now, I've thought, if only it wasn't just me who made the rules. If only I could say, do what your father says. If it wasn't just me who is always, always the bad guy. But he died when she was just a little girl, and that left me without a partner in this, and it left her without a good cop or a bad cop, whatever she needed in the moment she needed it. And in those first years after he was gone, it was then I saw the anger, that keen sense of unfairness. And really, I could see her point. It's just that I am the goose. When she turned 13, when we started talking about rules, about who she could see and what she could do, I thought it would be so much easier if we were living in a police state. If I could just say, the government says you must be in bed by 10 p.m. It's not my fault. It's the law. If I could just say, I have no option here. I've looked up the statutes and you absolutely can't travel on a train by yourself to meet your friends in a park after 8 p.m. There'll be people checking. If it wasn't just me who made the rules, who doled out the punishments, but someone else, some faceless bureaucrat that I could blame, then maybe she wouldn't hate me quite so much. Turns out, though, that I am the goose. Because now, even though I can say, without any exaggeration, that it is the law she can't leave the house unless it's for exercise, and that it is not my fault at all. In fact, the fault seems to lie with some bat in China. But her fury, her anger, is still directed at me. But as I lie with her the night before her birthday, when she is tired and feels friendless, I realise that she is also a goose. A snow goose who really, right now, needs to fly from the nest and away from me. Biologically programmed to do so, in fact. And here am I, forcing her back under my wing, my big, stupid wing. And I say to her that perhaps, yes, her birthday will be the worst. And I don't point out that there are other people right round the world doing it tougher, and she is in fact terribly lucky. And it's not my bloody fault, by the way. I just listen and let her cry, and I stroke her hair, and we fly nowhere. Because there is nowhere. Not for now, anyway.
That was The Snow Goose, written and read by Sophie Townsend. There's been a lot of refiguring of relationships, romantic relationships, throughout this whole pandemic. With the world around us shifting so suddenly, people are working through what they want and who they are and what they don't want. And there's a lot of imagining too about what might be when this whole thing is over. And playwright Ross Mueller has been thinking about this and how we might try to come to some new understandings and a new way of being with the person we love. This is I Need Your Full Attention.
Okay, I need your full attention. There's something I have to tell you, something about me, you and me. It's something about us. Yes, there is definitely an us, I think. Okay, here's the thing. I think about you a lot. I mean, I think about a lot of things, but mostly you. Every day, every hour, if I'm honest. Okay, if I'm honestly being honest, I think about you pretty much all the time. This is unexpected, right? Okay, it's not supposed to be intense, and I'm genuinely sorry for crowding your Zooms and your Blue Jeans and your Skypes and your socials, but working from home is bringing out whole new concepts of appropriate social distance, and this is... Okay, I just have to say this. Here we go. My concept of us is like a magnetic pole. For me, you are north, south, east, and west. I revolve around us, attracted, repelled, and bouncing and attracted, and my personal compass is going crazy. I mean, I'm totally referencing us in everything, every action, reaction, every experience, big, small, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what I'm doing. I'm thinking about you when I'm working, when I'm exercising, when I'm taking the rubbish out, making coffee, paying bills, in the morning, in the evening, when I'm wondering, is it cold enough to turn on the heater? Should I wear a sweatshirt and a t-shirt, or just a t-shirt? Shoes and socks, or just bare feet? What to eat tonight? Is this an alcohol-free day? How about Indian takeaway? Is that allowed? Is that even legal anymore? I honestly actually don't know, and I want to ask you. But the house is empty, and so I think about the fact that I'm thinking about you so much, and then I find myself wandering aimlessly into the bedroom with an unconscious mission of remapping my sock drawer, and I'm impressed by the multitudes of mismatches, and then deep underneath the explorers, I discover my passport, and I think, am I ever going to use this again? So I leave it where I found it and escape to the living room and make myself think about Netflix documentary series, which one should we watch and what to avoid, and where am I going to sit tonight to watch Netflix alone again? On the new couch or the old couch? The old couch is tiny and tatty, but it has a great view of the new couch, and if I stay on the crappy couch, then the new couch will remain pristine and looking new for us. Every day, the reverberating, the question on loop is, what would Natasha say? What would Tash want to do if I was with you? And I love this. Exhilarating, exhausting all in one breath, unavoidable, infectious. This us is a problem. Self-diagnosis? This is not living. I'm working and eating and breathing, but continually romancing a subterranean desire for companionship, and this is fundamentally antagonistic to personal growth. A star in the night sky. I think of you. Light from another universe. I think of you. Because honestly, I really thought we did the smart thing. I agreed. And I thought we were strong enough to be strong enough and smart enough to make this work. And we drew the lines on the map. We did the calculations. We agreed. Before the restrictions, we said, we're not going to be like the rest of humanity. We're sophisticated. We can coexist with emails and phone sex. And we can prove to the world that two people can be together and apart. We don't have to be at the same dinner table, in the same living room, in the same time zone, sleep in the same bed. We have lives. We can survive this. And I believe in that version of us. I agree to our independence, mutual, peaceful separation. But today, after the circumnavigation of independence, I've come to the conclusion that there is no freedom in being free. Quite the opposite, in fact, for me. So I have to tell you, I need you. And I do not want to wait and compromise, agonize, overthink this anymore. So if I can have your full attention for one moment, my question is, do you think after all this is over, do you think when we get back to normal, do you think you will live with me again? That's it. That's what I'm thinking. Just putting it out there. And I hope you say yes. I do. Because when I think about future, I see me and you. Us is what I want.
That was Ross Mueller with I Need Your Full Attention. Currently living through a pandemic naturally prompts us to want to reflect on past pandemics. Most of us can remember SARS and swine flu, but they weren't on the same scale as this current outbreak. But 100 years ago, there was, of course, the outbreak of the Spanish influenza, a deadly flu that spread around the world, killing more than 40 million people. But figures like this often dwarf the personal stories of a tragedy of such a huge scale. Occasionally, though, we get a glimpse into what it was really like for the families who were struck by the disease. And it was just as personal as it is now. As it turns out, my own family, living in regional Western Australia, were some of those impacted by this deadly outbreak. This is Treasure the Hours with Those Dear to You.
Wednesday, September 17th, 1919. My own dear Muriel, this is my first attempt at writing for over a month, so you must be considerate. I am sitting on the veranda, my overcoat over my pyjamas, with socks and boots on. You know, of course, how bad I have been, and at present I am very weak. I cannot dress myself. I can't speak properly or I would speak to you on the phone, and I can only walk about 20 yards without exhaustion. I have to fight for my breath. I am afraid my heart is very weak, and until that improves, there will be little improvement in me.
My mum dug up this letter the other day. She's been holding onto it for years. It was written by her grandfather, my great-grandfather, Harry Cole, while in hospital sick with the Spanish flu. I wouldn't normally pay much attention to these bits of family history, but at the moment the parallels are stark. Harry was 29 years old when he wrote that letter. He was married to Muriel, but we always knew her as Biddy. They had three children and were expecting another. They lived in Mullawa, which is a tiny town 100 kilometres east of Geraldton in Western Australia. The details are hazy, but by August of 1919, Harry had contracted the virus that was wreaking havoc around the world. Weighing just 45 kilograms and in isolation in the Geraldton hospital, Harry gathered enough strength to write to his wife, Biddy.
It is pleasant here in the daytime, but I dread the nights. No sleep, a cough, and a struggle for breath. While I sit up as I am doing now, breathing does not greatly distress me. I long to leave this place, but I rather fear leaving the doctor in case I had a heart attack, which would be fatal. My dear nurse, a young girl of 22, who has been so kind and considerate towards me, did not come down today. I hope she has not taken the sickness. Poor dear girl. As matters stand at present, I think I am to be taken home on Tuesday. If so, both you and Dad must come for me. Dad to carry or lift me about, if necessary, and you to carry the bag. You would have to get a cab to take me to the station, and on the way, we should have to stop while I went in the inhalation chamber for a few minutes. At Agena, you would have to have a box or two for me to climb up into the spring cart or sulky. Now you have an idea how weak I am. I may improve a good deal. There are 5 days yet. Oh, if I could be healthy again. That is my one thought. I am afraid I have written a lot, all about myself. But you know, dear, where my thoughts always are. With you, dearest, and the kiddies. The sun is setting now and the nurse will bring me tea in a minute, so I must leave off. With love to Dad and Mum, Willie and Jean, you dearest, yourself and our darling kiddies, I remain your ever-loving husband, Harry.
But Harry never made it home, because a few days after writing that letter, he died. His obituary was published in the Mullawa News.
Quite a gloom was cast over the town when we heard of the death from heart failure of our state school teacher, Mr. Cole. He had been stationed here since last Christmas and during that time had made many friends, especially among the school children who will feel the loss keenly. He leaves a wife and three little children for whom the greatest sympathy is felt.
My mum tells me that Harry had been a conscientious objector during World War I. And so it's ironic that a virus spread around the world by returning troops ended up killing him. Harry's wife, Biddy, was now a widow, 24 years old, with three children and pregnant. Not long after Harry's death, Biddy moved herself and her children 600 kilometres south to the small wheatbelt town of Narrogin to start a new life. Among the few belongings that we still have of Biddy's is a poem. Most likely she heard it at church or read it in a book, and wanting to remember it during this tumultuous time, she wrote out the words. It goes, "Dare to be happy, don't shy away. Reach out and capture the joy of the day. Life is for living, give it a try. Open your heart to the sun in the sky. Dare to be loving and trusting and true. Treasure the hours with those dear to you. Dare to be kind, it's more than you know. Give joy to others and watch your own grow." Today, as we live in this unrecognisable world and know very little about what's to come, maybe we can find some comfort in the parallels that exist between our experiences and our ancestors. And somehow, despite all the heartbreak and loss, people like my great-grandmother managed to pick themselves up and keep going. That was Treasure the Hours with Those Dear to You, written and produced by me, Fiona Pepper, read by Gig Clark, and music by Nathan Nisbet. This week's episode of Corona Tales was produced by Sophie Townsend and myself. Join me next week for more stories of love, friendship and family all under the cloud of COVID-19 as we continue our best of fictions on RN Summer.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.